Hi, and welcome to the fourth episode. I'm your host, Vincent Young, and today I'll talk with Ben Williams about how companies with a sales team in place can use PLG to drive efficient growth. This interview is part of my upcoming book called Product-Led Sales. If you're doing sales today and are wondering how you can leverage PLG, then this book is for you. For early access, visit plgandsales.com. Now let me introduce our guest for today. Ben is a product and growth executive with over 20 years of experience. He has had roles like VP of Product-Led Growth at Snyk and VP of Product at CloudBees. Nowadays, he's an advisor to founders and product and growth leaders of growth stage B2B startups. He's a self-confessed geek around all things PLG, building and scaling product and growth teams, and loop-based growth strategy. He also runs a successful newsletter on PLG called The Product-Led Geek. Hi Ben, great to have you today. To get us started, can you share some highlights of initiatives you've worked on where product-led growth and sales were effectively being combined in a go-to-market motion?
Yeah, I think there's different ways to combine PLG with what I think of as a human sales motion. Most of the spotlight falls on the lure of a massive top of funnel providing this never-ending pipeline for sales. But the reality is that a lot of ingredients have to be just right for that formula to be successful. The less often spoke about motion is driving success within your existing customer base and leveraging that success to foster expansion opportunities. But almost all of my advising clients are building or have built some kind of hybrid motion to some extent. Some are what I think of as PLG native, and they're layering on sales motions to scale to larger contract values, go up market. And others have come from sales-led origins where PLG can improve the quality of their lead funnel, drive improved close rates, and in some cases, help them expand down market. I think probably the best and most well-known and arguably most successful at scale example that I have would be from my time at Snyk. So the entire motion from Snyk's inception was actually built around bottom-up adoption of the product as a means to drive company-wide monetization. But the first examples of monetization actually weren't through the product-led route. It was through an outbound motion. And then that whole motion was very much improved by the addition of what was going on in the product and the intelligence and knowledge of what was going on in the product to drive pipeline and inform the sales process and the conversations that the sellers were having with potential customers. The founders, they understood that developers at the time were increasingly caring about security of their code, that they needed better tools, they needed less friction than they'd had. What made Snyk so successful was just that crazy focus on the end developer experience, not just in the product itself, but the go-to-market model. And for those folks who know Snyk, much of the success has been fueled by product-led growth, which I think is an acknowledgement of the reality that most developers would rather not talk to sales folks. But at Snyk, we were really trying to build a massive free user base, but not to try and monetize individuals there. We knew that if we were able to get a large volume of happy individual developers using Snyk for free, then they would be more likely to pay for the product when the need arose. And when they wanted to use Snyk in a bigger team, or when they wanted to go from a personal use case to a business use case, there were a lot of open source maintainers using Snyk on their projects. And it was common for those devs who started using Snyk in open source to introduce it at the companies they worked at. So that whole notion of bottom-up adoption was fundamental to the strategy. And to start with, in the early days, I think as is the case in most companies, sellers would try to speak with anyone who came through the product door that we could identify as being from a big company. And I think that was generally okay in the early days with Snyk, because the first sellers were super close to the product team. And through those customer conversations, a great deal was learned that helped shape the product's evolution. But that situation probably went on a bit longer than it should have before the process was refined out of necessity as sign-up volume increased and we needed to have some kind of filter that helped the sales team prioritize which prospects they engage with. So at first, that model was based around simple signals. Has the account reached any kind of usage limits? has a threshold been reached in the count of contributing developers, which was the licensing mechanism? Has there been a self-serve purchase? There was a naive, non-scientific definition of activation, which was broken down into what we call success levels. I wrote a post about this, actually, different success levels scoring differently. But over time, as we gathered enough behavioral usage data, we were able to confidently redefine that and replace those success level metrics into something that was actually predictive of retention and of monetization. And we integrated that into the product qualified account scoring model. I think one interesting thing to note is there was never any pushback from the sales team in that context about the self-serve motion, about potential cannibalization, because they'd seen historically the bottom-up motion was just so important in fueling the enterprise pipeline. In fact, even at the scale that Sneak was when I left at the end of 2022, nearly half of all recurring revenue came from companies who started using the product in a really meaningful way before any kind of sales engagement. And that was a metric I call product influenced revenue, but it was quite demonstrative of the impact that bottom-up motion had on the overall revenue motion.
Yeah, and Stick is an amazing example here. You mentioned something there, the product influenced revenue, which makes me think right away about what are the metrics to look at. Can you talk a bit more about that? Are there any others that companies need to look at when assessing if PLG is the right addition to their go-to-market funnel?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions in this that I think the answer might be it depends. PLG has such a wide spectrum that how you track progress, how you track impact, how you track success, it's going to be really dependent on the focus and the qualitative goals you have for the initiative. Why are you doing this? If you're effectively solving a problem that end users deem super important and it's painful enough for them to be actively seeking out solutions for, then the efficacy of your product-led acquisition motion will be something that probably is important to track. From a sales perspective, you'd probably want to look at the dollar value of qualified pipeline that's generated, as well as tracking conversion rate of that pipeline when compared with the outbound motion over time. You'd also want to compare things like LTV and net revenue retention between the different pipeline sources. At Sneak, net revenue retention was something obviously we tracked closely, but in the context of product-led sales, net revenue retention was actually double-digit percentage points higher for customers that came through product usage. In other words, they were in that product-influenced revenue bucket versus the outbound motion. And that was obviously some significant finding for us. CAC and payback period may well be things you're looking to improve. You'd maybe want to cohort things like ACV, time to value, time to close, and so on. But you have to just go back to basics and ask yourself, what are you trying to improve? What's most important to you as a business? And the answer can't be all the things, or at least not to start with. So I think focus is really important, understanding what is most important to the business as you're embarking on this journey and setting your sights on improving that thing and figuring out what you need to measure to do that.
Mm-hmm. In the beginning, you already mentioned a few ways that PLG can help or can be combined with a sales team and drive value for a business. It's not only the customer acquisition side, but also, as you mentioned already, other parts. Can you talk a bit about how companies can do that? What ways are available that they could consider?
There's a lot of variables to consider here. Trying to introduce a motion to drive bottom-up adoption and generate top-of-funnel isn't going to work if there is little organic demand from end users. There has to be this user problem that is burning enough that those users are motivated enough to be out there actively looking for a solution to that problem. Without that fundamental dynamic, a product-led acquisition strategy is probably just not appropriate. And that's often the case for many enterprise sales-led companies. They're solving big, meaty, company-level problems. They don't really have much focus on user-level problems. They see, again, this lure of strong top of funnel, even though it's not really something that might be appropriate for them. That being said, I don't think you have to give up on that. Maybe there are adjacent problems that your technology could solve for where there is that organic bottom-up demand and where you see perhaps natural cross-sell or upsell path into your core use cases. And it might just be that you're early, right? That the market that you're serving just isn't developed enough. And that's a different topic. But educating a market to drive awareness and inflate demand, that's a tough task. But putting acquisition aside, it's my strong belief that every company will need to become product-led in their approach to retention through delivering exceptional user experiences. The alternative is those companies will, I think, eventually be disrupted by others that enter the market. They provide the same value, but they package it in a way that users love to use. And when your product drives strong usage retention, of course, strong revenue retention typically follows. And if you can build your monetization escalator effectively, you can find ways to generate more revenue from each customer over time, whether that's through expansion to more users, with more consumption, with adoption of additional use cases that you're providing and catering for. And when you combine that product-led focus on usage retention with proper product instrumentation, you can begin to arm the sales team with the right data, the right signals they need to farm the existing customer base for expansion opportunities, letting the product take at least some of the load in nurturing opportunities, with sales harvesting them when those opportunities are ripe and not before. So I think common pitfall I actually see with companies trying to introduce product-led motions into sales-led companies and vice versa, in fact. But it's typically where intervention in an opportunity is premature. So defining a collaboration model that has patience at its core and understanding the right signals in terms of the right time to engage and so on is really important. Establishing guardrails between product and sales can be really important too. But when it comes to the meat of the work in terms of actually integrating PLG in whatever shape or form into a traditionally sales-led organization, I think you most importantly have to just be really conscious of the existing culture and not try to push up against it too hard. You mentioned you chatted with Francesca from Amplitude, and I'm sure they've got war stories about that. But the most effective way I've found is often to not disrupt the existing motion at all. I think it can be catastrophic if you try to change things wholesale before proving things out. Instead, I think it's far more effective to form a small tiger team, have the right people involved, including folks from product or growth, sales, data, have lots of opportunities for feedback loops that inform the signals used by the model, inform the scoring, inform the playbooks used by the sales folks, and have that team accountable and responsible for go-to-market experimentation and thinking of it as an experiment, figuring out what works, what are the important signals, how should we score those signals, when's the right time to engage with an opportunity that's coming from the product, how should we engage, and not try to boil the ocean. I think it can be tempting to focus on all the different ways in which you can look at what's going on in the product and all the different playbooks you might run, whether it be expansion, new revenue, or the different arrays of expansion, churn prevention. But at the end of the day, yeah, I think boiling the ocean is, again, a recipe for disaster. So pick a playbook to focus on first and ignore the others for now, right? You'll get to them. At the end of the day, no process, no scoring model is going to be perfect. But if you start simple, if you approach it in the right way, methodically, you can make sure you stand the best chance of iterating your way to it being something that's ultimately highly effective.
You mentioned in the beginning already that you had the luck that at Sneak, there wasn't a lot of objection coming from the sales team around this path. But that's not always the case, right? Even if you're not trying to disrupt the status quo of the company, then still there might be objections or valid concerns even around how this will affect the results they're seeing today. Do you have any examples of how you dealt with that or what could be a good approach?
Yeah, I think building confidence across the org is important. And that starts with the executive team. It may be that your executive team is already aligned, or it may be you're a kind of sole voice championing this. There are generally a couple of upfront approaches that combined are effective. I think you have to start with making some comparisons with successful applications of product-led strategies in comparable companies and situations. Those examples don't need to be in the same industry. You might not even have the luxury of examples in the same industry, but the examples should have similar context around the business and the market dynamics. I found that actually, if you reach out to product and growth leaders at companies that look similar in the business, have those similarities in model, they're often really happy to share their journey, share what worked, share what didn't, and so on. And building a portfolio of examples like that can go a long way in making it feel like this is something that is achievable for us and that it's a path that's been trodden before. The second thing is building out a model around your business. Sure, that model is going to be laden with assumptions, but you have to have alignment about why you're considering PLG, what the goals are. You have to have some kind of realistic foundation in why and how whatever it is that you're looking to do can help you achieve those goals. And I think also when you're doing that, considering alternative, what if we didn't do this strategies? If we didn't do this, we could do this. That helps you present a more balanced perspective and not feel like you're necessarily just cheerleading on some passion project of yours, right? So when you approach things like that methodically and the case you bring forward is well thought out and well researched, I think it's certainly going to inspire more confidence. And I think it can be useful also to think of any initiatives in this area as experiments, an exercise in learning how to grow. But that can be a double-edged sword as well. You can't mistake that for lack of commitment, because PLG is not a quick fix. It's not a quick fix for anything. It is a strategic shift that needs long-term commitment. But pilot-style projects can help build confidence for sure. One of my clients implemented a small ungated product experience on their marketing site before making the decision to adopt a freemium strategy and create a full-fledged free plan and self-serve motion and designing their monetization escalator around that. So identifying those things that you can do to learn that will help build confidence on a smaller scale before you invest further, that can be a worthwhile exercise. And I think particularly when you're in an organization that has a strong sales-led culture, if you can find some people, particularly in the sales organization, who maybe have seen this working before in other places and recruit them as champions, that can go a long way as well. If you have voices on the inside of a sales organization who are advocates and passionate advocates for the ideas that you're proposing, that can go a long way in terms of gaining acceptance within the broader organization.
And one of the things that will help there as well is focus. You mentioned a few times, don't boil the ocean. The final question for today, how do companies decide where to start? How do they know what is the most value-adding place or the most accessible or easy place?
Yeah, it depends, I think. I'm sorry, it's, I guess, the theme of the answers today. It definitely helps to have someone in the team who's lived and learned across a variety of different hybrid go-to-market models. In the absence of that type of experience in-house, leaning on an advisor can be hugely beneficial. Also, I've talked about a growth model before. I think building a growth model can really help you develop this shared sense of understanding, build alignment around what are the bottlenecks in your business, in how you grow, what are the constraints, why do those constraints exist, and therefore help you really hone in and identify the places where elements of PLG might help and apply critical thinking. If we were to apply PLG here, what would that look like? Why do we have any confidence that doing so would alleviate this constraint or this bottleneck in our growth model? Do we have an acquisition problem, or should the priority be on improving retention? And do you have the right situational content? Are there ingredients in place for that to happen? I talked about if you're focusing on acquisition with PLG, then the market dynamic needs to be there. The user demand needs to be there. You can't just go out there and build something, expect folks to come if it's not something that is an important enough problem that folks are out there trying to solve on their own. So yeah, I think the answer is it depends, but I found an effective way to do that is modeling the business, understanding the constraints, understanding really your goals for PLG, and figuring out the right place to start in terms of achieving those goals.
Great. Thanks so much, Ben. Before we close off, you also share a lot of your thoughts on your blog. You mentioned you published something today even. Do you want to tell the audience a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. My alias is the Product-Led Geek. I'm writing on my newsletter, which is at plg.news. Would love for you to check out some of my writing there, and hopefully you'll find it useful.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Vincent.
All right, that's it for today. There were some great insights in there again. The importance of having a good growth model for the business came up a number of times. And don't try to boil the ocean. Instead, focus your PLG efforts on driving key results that the company needs right now. These insights and more are included in my upcoming book about product-led sales. To get early access, go to plgandsales.com. Thank you, have a great day, and see you next time.